This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Have your say. 1300 Joy 949.
Gay
News
Week.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9 with Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt.
Thanks to the Royal Daltons for their typical fun and hilarity every week from 4 till 7.
Here at Gay News Week, we aim to cover topics that have been in our news over the past week and how they impact on you, on us and on our community.
On tonight's show, we've got a selection of bits and pieces from around the Olympics.
We've got aged care and diversity.
The gay marriage debate occurring tonight at Monash University's Peninsula campus.
And the icon of the week.
And if at any time you want to get in contact, please do so.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. Talk to us. Call 1300 Joy 949. Email onair@joy.org.au or SMS 0427 Joy 949.
Now here's Matt with our top story.
Thanks, Sammy. Good evening. The Federal Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, Mark Butler, has recently announced a reform package for the aged care sector, which will also have a focus on GLBTI aged members of our community. The reform strategy, which has been welcomed by the LGBTI Health Alliance, aims at tackling issues such as the discrimination and the lack of sensitivity towards GLBTI elderly people. Joy 94.9's Dean Beck spoke with Mr. Butler for his program On the Line.
The Honourable Mark Butler announced last Tuesday that the gay and lesbian community will be receiving some special attention in regards to aged care. He is the Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, Mark Butler. Welcome to Joy.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
Good, thank you. New developments for the aged care sector and the GLBTI community.
They are new developments, but they're developments that we've been talking to the community about for some time now. As your listeners might know who take an interest in this area, the Productivity Commission handed down a very comprehensive report last year which canvassed some of the issues that LGBTI elders had raised with them about things like a lack of sensitivity in some parts of the sector about their particular needs, some actual or at least perceived discrimination by aged care providers and things like that. And so the Productivity Commission recommended that we consider developing a discrete, a standalone LGBTI aged care strategy. And this week I've announced, after some considerable discussions with the LGBTI Health Alliance, that we do intend to do that by the end of the year.
Now, this comes on the back of some funding to assist those working in the aged care sector. Tell us about that.
That's right. A couple of years ago, Tanya Plibersek actually announced a pilot project with ACON in New South Wales to pilot some sensitivity training for aged care staff around, as I said, the particular needs and preferences of LGBTI elders. We evaluated that pilot formally and it evaluated very, very well. So in the recent budget, I announced funding to mainstream that sensitivity training, if you like, across Australia, and we're in the process of talking to various players in the sector about how that would be delivered. We've also already done some work on having LGBTI elders recognised as a particular group in under the Aged Care Act, so that providers will be required to take or pay regard to their particular needs. So the strategy that I've announced this week really pulls all of that together and I think allows the community, particularly through the LGBTI Health Alliance, to start to raise some other issues of particular interest to LGBTI elders so that we can make sure that they're taken into account as we develop the broader reform process.
The aged care sector is under a $3.7 billion reform package. this strategy for the gay and lesbian community will be part of that, is that correct?
That's right. And in my discussions with the Alliance, I've made clear my view that I don't see much worth in us spending a great deal of time on this strategy and coming up with a rolled gold, sort of beautifully worded strategy in 2 years' time, because by then we'll have designed a whole lot of elements of the reform process. I've said I want this strategy done by the end of the year, so that what comes out of that strategy can feed directly into the design work that we're going to do around the elements of that $3.7 billion reform package. Things like the My Aged Care website, the quality indicators that aged care providers will have to comply with, which will include things like sensitivity to particular groups, including LGBTI elders, and a range of other things. So it will be fairly quick work. I've already got my department working with the Health Alliance on the elements of that strategy, but we need to make sure that it's a strategy that actually informs our detailed design work for the broader reform process.
Now, the government will come under some criticism, no doubt, for targeting the GLBTI community. Why should we be favoured?
Oh, well, it's not a question of favouring the community. It's a question of recognising the particular needs and the preferences of that community, as we do a number of other cohorts in the community. For example, people of a culturally and linguistically diverse background, as we should do for people of a sexually diverse or gender diverse background. So I don't see this as preferring one group over the other. It is making sure that particular needs of Australians who've worked hard and paid their taxes all through their lives are taken into account in their retirement and as they start to develop a need for aged care services. It's something I'm unashamedly proud of our government doing.
In practical terms, how will this change the aged care sector? What will it look like in 10 years' time?
Well, what I'm hoping is that the sector is a sector and a series of aged care services that LGBTI elders feel very comfortable using, that LGBTI elders feel responds to their needs and their preferences. What we're moving to in a broader sense with this aged care reform process is a sector that is much more consumer-centred rather than really centred on the convenience of providers. And if we are going to be consumer-centred, it needs to recognise that consumers come in different shapes and forms and with different needs and preferences, whether they result from their sexual diversity or their cultural diversity or that they're from an Indigenous background or whatever. What I'm convinced of the need to do is to make sure that the aged care sector responds to all of those needs so that all consumers are catered for.
As our nation ages and as the baby boomers hit retirement age, this action couldn't come soon enough.
Well, look, I think that's right. And I think what we heard through the Productivity Commission process is that there has been a level of frustration about this issue on the part of LGBTI elders and the LGBTI community more broadly. After the Commission report was delivered, I conducted 35 or 40 forums around the country in capital cities and in regional areas. And LGBTI elders attended many, many of those forums and spoke directly to me about those issues as well. So it's clear that we need to do work as a nation and as a government on this. And I've greatly appreciated the very frank and clear advice that I've got from the people who attended those forums and also from organisations like the Health Alliance.
How are we going to know that it's on track?
Well, as I've said, there's a fairly short time frame for this that I've asked my department and the LGBTI Health Alliance to work to. So by the end of the year, I'm very hopeful we'll have some good level of detail to talk to you and to your listeners about.
Mark Butler, it is a delight to speak to you once again. Thank you so much for joining us today on Joy.
Thank you, Dean.
Mark Butler, the Acting Minister for Health and the Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, joining us here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair@joy.org.au. Call 1300 JOY 949. Find us on social media. Send a message via pigeon. Scream from the other side of the street. Throw stones at the window. This is Gay Newsweek.
And you're back here with Sammy and Matt and Jeffrey. We've just heard Mark Butler, the Acting Federal Health Minister and the Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, in an interview with Dean Beck, which will be played again on the line on Thursday at midday. And we're going to enter a discussion now about the content of that, and I just wanted to open up by setting the scene. The first bit to make sure that we understand is that most of the people, I think, in nursing homes these days are around the age of 80, which means that they were born in about 1932, which means in 1951 was when they were in their formative years, up to about 21 when they became legal adults, and that gay male sex, at least, was illegal in Victoria until 1980. So when the people of that age group were 48 was when consensual sex between male adults became legal. So I think that's setting the scene about the particular group we're talking about, who are aged GLBTI seniors, is important. So what do we think about
I think one of the things that really speaks to me is a lot of people, you know, we have a lot of people within our community that may have lost their long-term same-sex partner, and they don't have the ability or the family around to help care for them, and they're going and are living in these aged care facilities. And they're within an environment that the staff don't have the training or the understanding that they have same-sex attracted people living there. And they're basically having to go back into the closet because they're grieving for losing their loved one. They don't have anyone else to rely on, and they don't feel comfortable to be able to say, you know, as a man or as a woman, you know, I've lost my partner.
And as a result of that, it's been said that basically these people have to kind of, it's been said, de-gay their home and try to hide those kind of memories that it's been part of their lives. And it's troubling, but it's actually a good move, the fact that Mark Butler has identified this within our community, that this is a problem and this is a problem that's happening, and he's taking steps to change it.
A study that was released over the last week or so identified that in a survey of aged care providers, 90% of them said that they had not experienced a GLBTI resident in their facility. So 90% of them in facilities that often have hundreds of residents or tens of residents seems a very low percentage to me. So clearly the people that are from our community are becoming invisible once they move into the residential aged care sector. And I think that's a tragedy.
And again, of course, we're coming from a time and a place where a lot of the residents, as you said, have come from a time and a place where it was illegal to be gay. So they're now back in the mentality of, well, I can't reveal who I am. I can't reveal what I really think about life. I'm stuck here living in this environment and I can't be myself that I have been.
Which, yeah, definitely they are a vulnerable group, because you think about discrimination within our society, that you hear young people that they still may have support groups around them, when it's often when you're talking about elderly people, they may have their friends not around anymore, and they're the kind of issues where they become vulnerable because they don't have anyone there to confide in.
That's right, and part of a community that they might have only grown up with having a couple of people, trusted people around them, because, of course, again, coming from a time when it was illegal to be gay, they had very small environments of friends, not like us where we have meeting venues,
exactly,
and places to go and, yeah, gay newspapers and all that sort of stuff. You know, they might have lived in that environment, but now they're going back to not being able to.
And Alzheimer's Australia earlier this year, have actually said that 46% of gay and lesbian people in their older years live alone, as compared with 23% of the general population. So isolation is going to be a huge issue for these people prior to moving into an aged care facility, let alone beyond that.
And I think one of the very important moves that they are doing as well is they're looking at providing training for the staff within these facilities to make them realise that you do have GLBTI members within your within your residence, and being able to give them the skills to actually understand that as well.
A quote that I quite liked that I've read is that those who grow up in the pre-gay liberation age have endured a lifetime of having been vilified as sinners by the church, as criminals in the law, and pathologised by medicine. So I think that just gives us a point of reference from where these people are currently from.
Well, of course, and you know, when they're filling in the forms to go into these facilities, whether they're doing it themselves or it's been done by people close to them, you know, the forms are actually saying sex or marital status rather than gender or partner. So, you know, the forms, even within the forms that they're presented with, is a very broader community, straight community forms that they're actually being to fill in. So they're confronted with that from the get-go when they're going into these facilities to basically say, this is the way the straight community sees you, and this is the box that you have to fit in to be a part of this age community.
Yeah, well, definitely. And these are the problems that they're facing by, well, obviously they've experienced earlier in their lives in where it's like the decriminalisation of homosexuality kind of thing in Australia, and how they've kind of lived through that, and these things they've passed, and then it comes back to this where they're going back into it, and they're faced with, yeah, as you said, the kind of things that it's just assumed that elderly people are straight, which isn't the case, of course, because it's just not true. And by being faced with such a with these kind of forms, it's putting them in the situation from straight away where they have to kind of deny who they are.
And
one of the things that comes up out of being asked sex or marital status is about gender. And certainly there is a whole different barrage of issues that exist for people that are transgendered, in that they don't necessarily fit into the two options available to them on the form. And so that's a particular challenge.
And, of course, you know, we're talking about people within our community that also are intersex, that actually identify as both, and they are actually both. The other thing is, too, is, you know, a lot of these aged – well, not a lot, but a lot of the aged care facilities are actually run by religious organisations, and they don't have – they don't have the best history in their thoughts and support towards our community generally. They're now running aged care facilities where we're saying to – our older generation of our community that, yeah, you can go and live in this home. Yes, you might get looked after really well, but you really, really have to hide who you are.
Which is really interesting to see what happens when it comes with this aged care strategy, is whether the views of these organisations, the religious organisations that run these aged care facilities, whether they actually change their views and whether they change their practices to kind of accommodate for the GLBTI age community.
That's right. We've had an SMS in that has said they either de-gay or go back into the closet. So, yeah, that is very, very true.
That's certainly the findings. We've got a lot more that we could talk to you about with regards to this topic, but you're listening to Gay News Week. You're listening to Sammy, Jeffrey and Matt on Joy 94.9.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
And, of course, one of the biggest stories dominating the media over the past week has been, of course, the Olympics.
It's been a little bit hard to hide from it, unfortunately. I mean, I'm sure there are some people. I mean, I'm a bit of an Olympics buff myself, so I really, really do enjoy the Olympics. The equestrian's been on this week, which is one of the sports that I did. I'm hanging out for the athletics next week, which is another sport I was involved in. And we just, you know, you can't help but not talk about it. But a lot of people are sort of like, am I waiting for it to be over? Am I really enjoying it? I know a lot of friends of Joy that have actually been sitting up until late every night. So,
well, I've got to say, as a personal account kind of thing, Channel 9's coverage has been very centric around kind of the swimming. And
it always is.
It's one, well, I can't remember that many Olympics, but I've definitely grown to appreciate having those men on my TV every night and looking up and saying, oh, well, hello, that's quite nice.
I'm extremely shocked by your take on that, Matt.
Yeah, I'm really sure you are. Jeffrey, I'd like to hear your take on it.
I agree with Matt's take on it. I think we should definitely encourage that level of dress in people with bodies that are like that.
Definitely.
But I think beyond that, I actually wondered about us covering the Olympics on the show, but it is the biggest story out there this week in what is...
Yeah, it's basically very, not talking about the elephant in the room, so...
Yeah,
and I
really.
Mean, you know, it's great to see, you know, the Australians out there doing well. We've got a couple of, you know, we've been talking about the out athletes. We still have quite a few that are actually out there competing at the moment. You know, we've got a few equestrian riders that are about to start in the dressage. There's quite a few lesbians playing field hockey for the Netherlands.
No.
Yeah. Well, you know, the lesbian count is down because softball's no longer in the Olympics.
I
I saw a report for that. That's
what... I know. But, you know, I was, an equestrian enthusiast myself, Andrew Hoy, who has been the first Australian to compete in 7 Olympic Games. Now, he's been competing for Australia for 34 years, which is longer than one of his teammates has been alive. So, wow. You know, I think that's an amazing achievement, even though Australia didn't do well. It was great to see, you know, talking about Queens, it was great to see the Queen's granddaughter, Zara Phillips, get second. Mm. But we've still got so many. But one of the things that I've read recently that I was quite excited to hear is part of the training for the volunteers that actually got in the lead up to the Olympics was they were actually prepared in handling complaints about PDAs, personal displays of affection by same-sex couples.
Public displays of affection.
Public displays.
Sorry. Get the lingo right, Sammy.
I'm going to get it right. Of people coming up to them and saying, listen, those two men are holding hands or those two women are kissing, I don't like it. So they were actually given some training on how to handle that and
aware. They were expecting these issues to come up.
I think it
within the Olympic Village.
I think it was more of even the general public being at events and having other members of the general public there. And I think the good thing that has come out of this is the London Olympics organisation as a whole is making people aware that we are living within a great diverse community, whether it be multicultural, sexual related, whatever, and to be able to prepare their volunteers that they're going to be confronted by a variety of issues.
And the question that they actually had, I actually quite liked, which said, which of the responses, if someone made that complaint about two people holding hands, would you pick? One of them was to call them homophobes, the second one was to go and tell the people to stop holding hands, and the third one was to say, we're part of a diverse community and...
That includes gay, lesbian and bisexual couples. So I think that the great thing is they have actually had forethought on training their volunteers of a whole range of things that they need to be prepared. But, you know, we've still got quite a few athletes, out athletes competing, so I'm sure that we will hear by next week how they've gone.
I saw an interesting piece just while we wind this bit up. 52% of gay athletes that have outed themselves have won medals. Also says Outsports, and this is over a long period of time, but I would have to question the sourcing on that, but I think that's a fantastic achievement if it's actually true.
I'd love to get your thoughts on it. Send us a text 0427JOY949 or send us an email on air at joy.org.au. What sports have you been watching and which ones are you really getting into? Stick around, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek. SMS 0427JOY949. Email onair@joy.org.au. Call 1300JOY949. Find us on social media. Send a message via pigeon. Scream from the other side of the street. Throw stones at the window. This is Gay Newsweek.
Now, Matt, what's up next?
Thanks, Jeffrey. Tonight, Monash University's Peninsula Campus is hosting the third annual Pro-Vice-Chancellor's Debate. This year, the topic is, should same-sex marriage be legal? To discuss this further, Professor Leon Pitterman, who is the Pro-Vice-Chancellor of the Monash, Berwick and Peninsula Campus, spoke to Sammy earlier today.
This is Gay Newsweek with Sammy on Joy 94.9. Should same-sex marriage be legal is the topic for debate at the third annual Pro-Chancellor's public debate being held this evening at Monash's Peninsula Campus. I am joined by Pro-Vice-Chancellor for Monash's Berwick and Peninsula Campuses, Professor Leon Pitterman. Welcome, Professor Pitterman. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Tell us a little bit about what you expect for tonight's debate.
Well, like in any debate, we expect a robust discussion. We expect differences of opinion to be voiced and to be defended and justified. We also expect some audience participation to test the views of the debating teams. This debate has become a firm tradition in the Frankston Arts Centre, run by debaters, of course, run by the Monash Association of Debaters. The Monash Association of Debaters is a student-led group. They were world champions 2 years ago and they were semi-finalists this year. And they are a very formidable group, but they're not alone. The debating teams include members of parliament and well-known ethicists and lawyers. So they co-op teams where one of their own is on each side. And it really engenders discussion and debate around an important topic which has been in the public domain for some time and continues to be in the public domain, and one which is being debated in Parliament as well. So we feel that it is the role of the university to raise issues of social importance, to attach scholarly discussion to those issues. It's been a traditional role of universities for centuries to do that, and Monash in Frankston is performing that role in the local community.
So you are involved in choosing the topics, because this is your third year that the debate's been running. Who actually decides on the importance of the topic?
We have a small planning group, which usually 6 or 7 months prior to the event sits down and looks at some of the important controversial issues which have made headlines over the past 12 months. And the group consists of student representatives, students, particularly those associated with the Monash Association of Debaters, some academic staff, some representatives from the community and myself. And we go through a list of potential topics and then come to a conclusion about the one which we should debate. Last year, for example, we debated the topic, has Victoria become a nanny state? And is there too much interference with our day-to-day lives through various legislative processes? This one, I think, is possibly even more lively and contentious, and certainly will, I think, result in some very robust discussion and voice differences of opinions.
Yes, it's going to be. It's a very, of course, a topic on the tip of a lot of people's tongues this year, of course, with Labor allowing a conscience vote and a lot of pressure being put on the Liberal Party about it. And, of course, you know, you, as you said, you've got a Greens member of the Legislative Council, Sue Pennycalk, and also on the negative team, the Victorian State Director of the Australian Christian Lobby, of course, have been very adamant on their views on this. So, as you said, this could create some very, very interesting topics being raised during the discussion tonight.
Yeah, well, we will look forward to it, and it's a fair and open process, and we live in a democracy, we live in a pluralist and multicultural and, I hope, very tolerant society, and in such a society, these views need to be aired and people make decisions about them. We've had many changes in our societal mores over the years, including areas such as abortion and surrogacy, which has sort of stemmed from IVF technology and so on. And these are, in each of these instances, there's been robust debate and discussion, and this is just another one of these instances.
Do you think this is also a good way for this debate being held as part of Monash being able to show that they're open to discussion for members also of their teaching staff and their students that are same-sex attracted, showing that you have a fair and equal way of being able to attack these issues?
Absolutely. And I think that in particular, I'm pleased that at our local campus in Frankston, that we are able to draw in the local community. We believe that our local campuses at Frankston and Berwick and Gippsland need to play a role in fostering debate and discussion about issues like this in local communities, and that's what we're doing at the Peninsula campus.
Wonderful. Well, we just want to thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to hearing the results of how it went tonight and hope that the discussions continue and also head all the way up to Parliament.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
This is Sammy on Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
And we're back with a discussion about that interview that we just had, which is about a gay marriage debate, which is going on pretty much as we go live to air. Mm-hmm. We did talk about whether we could do some cross to it or not, but we've decided that we'll do it by having a discussion here in the studio instead.
I think the big thing is too is the Peninsula campus is actually in Frankston. So
a very long way from Joy's Melbourne studios.
Just slightly. Now, the thing that I find really, really interesting, of course, is this is the third year that they've had this debate. So, of course, last year he was talking about having the debate about, you know, whether Victoria is turning into a nanny state. And they have quite an extensive thing of being able to choose these topics. But I love the fact that they've actually gone, they've really gone to the guts of this. So they've got a Greens member of the Victorian Legislative Council as one of the affirmatives, of course, one of their faculty members and a member of their debate team. But in the negative side, they've actually got the Victorian chair of the Australian Christian Lobby.
Mm.
So, you know,
that'll be some interesting debate.
There's something to be said for getting all the regular players around the table and hearing the views. But I think it's a really it's a really good event to do it in that sort of forum and to apply normal debating rules to the people that are standing up there. So being able to have rebuttals and those sorts of things occur.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Monash's role in as you're saying, kind of confronting the issue is a really good thing. A lot of educational institutions like high schools or universities will often shy away from such a contentious issue like this, that we've got within the public forum at the moment. And the fact that Monash is saying, hey, let's talk about it. Let's just not just ignore it and pretend it's not happening. Let's talk about the issues.
And they've always made sure that the issue that they have for this debate is an issue that's quite contentious at the time. Yeah. So I think that the first thing is it's incredibly brave for them to be able to pick this issue. I mean, it's basically the biggest issue around at the moment, especially within our community.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree.
And it's certainly, you're right when you describe that it's a huge issue for our community, but I think this is the issue that really is polarising people out there in the community. So not only do people have an opinion on this issue, they have strong opinions on this issue. And I think that's what's really important with putting people in a room and coming up with an audience of people that probably do have different opinions. And I don't know the exact format of the debate and whether they're taking questions from the floor or not.
Yeah, they will be. Yeah, when I spoke to him, they will actually be taking questions from the floor. Public will be able to contribute. So I think that with them also being allowed to do that as well, is it's going to create a larger scene for them to actually talk about and give them more issues.
And I think it'll be really interesting to see whether any new points come up. See, the debate's been around for a while in the media, and whether any new points will come up for either affirmative or negative for the issue, whether anything new is going to pop up through this debate, which will be really interesting to see.
The thing that I like is also too is to see our tertiary education actually taking the ball with this and becoming involved within our community. There's so many members of our community being able to go out there and study and feel comfortable within their environments. They might not have been able to be out in high school. Then they can now go into an environment for tertiary study. And Monash is showing this in their way of being able to tackle this big issue. But, you know, as I said to him, you know, he's starting to show the support for members within their community, both faculty and students.
And universities are such broad organisations, and certainly Monash and Melbourne Uni and the big ones have so many students that to promote a diverse opinion and to have lots of people being able to talk about a lot of different topics goes back to the very nature of what universities are meant to do in the pursuit of knowledge and discussing difficult questions. And you could go back to, I don't know, ancient Greece and those sorts of civilizations. That was the point of universities. So to see Monash actually continuing that ethos, I think, is great.
And Sammy, you touched on before about kind of moving from high school to university. I'm experiencing this firsthand at the moment. I'm studying at university.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how your take on this is.
Yeah, and I've been just it's really refreshing, and I've been pleasantly surprised coming from, say, high school, where people are immature and people are really closed-minded, often the students, that is, in me being gay, that kind of I couldn't be really that open about the whole issue. And then coming to university and all of a sudden it being just such, it's just a non-issue, it's just, you're just another person, and it's just, and you can be open, you can be yourself, and people are generally positive. It's really weird seeing, coming from year 12 and people going into university the next year, how the general kind of the students, they just change views.
I think it's because of the acceptance of the environment that they're actually in. People are accepted for basically, you're there to study, you're there to do something, and it doesn't matter about the community, the cultural or sexual community that you've come from, is everyone's there together.
And I think that's also inside the organisations, they have a policy or a process these days of often not tolerating any other point of view with regards to discrimination or what have you. That doesn't mean you can't talk about issues such as through the debate in an intelligent way, but overt discrimination and those sorts of issues are actively discouraged. And so I think that's really positive.
And of course, you know, with RMIT recently saying that they're starting this Pride mentoring program to help GLBTI students moving into the workforce and having mentors available for them into safe environments and continue that along, because, you know, I think it's a pilot program that's just started aimed at current students, but it'd be great to see how this eventually rolls out and then can make people feel more comfortable moving into the workplace when they've had such a great environment. to study in.
And while we're on the topic of universities and being kind of accepting of GLBTI students, La Trobe, of course, they've been well known for their work in they have Pride Week and Gay Week, I think it is, over there. And it's good to see these universities taking a proactive role and saying, hey, discrimination against same-sex attracted people or the GLBTI community is just not on.
It was I was actually involved. Joy did an OB, an outside broadcast, for Pride Week.
Right.
I think it was in March of this year. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the volunteers that helped out there. And it was fantastic. And to be able to have people come up and say hello, we had a gentleman who was Middle Eastern, and he came up, grabbed some brochures, walked over to his boyfriend, gave him a hug and a kiss, and they walked around arm in arm. And nobody, you know, coming from an environment that if they were living in the country probably where their family was from, that it would be illegal and they would probably be put to death for being same-sex attracted. And for them to be in a university and feel so comfortable and really, you know, it almost brought a tear to my eye. It was awesome.
I think we also need to reflect there, because we have mentioned La Trobe, is about the fact that they've had some cuts to some of their study options. So we need to recognise that there are some challenges out there for queer studies units at the universities to maintain their content and their courses. So there are some stories that we want to keep an eye on.
All right. It'll be very interesting to see what happens with part of this whole debate, what the results are, and it'll be interesting to speak to someone who is there and see how that comes up. And, of course, thank you very much. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Hi, I'm Tanya Plibersek on Gay Newsweek with Sammy, Jeffrey and Matt on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair@joy.org.au. Call 1300 JOY 949. Find us on social media. Send a message via pigeon. Scream from the other side of the street. Throw stones at the window.
We've been talking about so many different things. Now, we have all have our Media Watch segment. So part of our Media Watch segment is we look at what's happening out there, whether it be with social media and what reporting's going on. Now, it's been a bit of interest to us at the moment that there's been a new Facebook group started off, and it's out on social media, which started out as Lost Gay Sydney. So it was a way of being able to keep our history alive through a social medium, and now we have a page that's started up for Lost Gay Melbourne, and I've you know, joined up as a member, and it's great to be able to see so much of our history being put up, from old programs, from events, pictures of clubs that people have been to, and events throughout the years. So what do you think about way of recording our history this way?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I've been having a look through the Facebook pages. There's Lost Gay Sydney and, of course, Lost Gay Melbourne as well. And, yeah, there's a lot of kind of drag culture that was around during kind of the 60s, 70s, 80s. And it's just really interesting to find a new way to preserve the memories of our community.
I think it's great, because one of the advantages of social media is once it's up there, it's essentially up there forever. And I think that really matters, because otherwise history and the photos and the stories are things that will be lost in people's belongings, that will be photos in photo albums or photos on individuals' computers. And so the benefit that has for the community over time to be able to look back and understand who we are, where we've come from and where we can go from here is really very important. So I actually think this is a great initiative, and it's an initiative at relatively no cost. Everyone chooses what bits and pieces they choose to put on the site.
I think the great thing we can also see from this as well is that people... We've got the Gay and Lesbian Archives, and people have been able to have, you know, books that they've found and stuff that's come from overseas throughout the years put into the archives and have histories actually written down. But with something like this, is social media is such a big part of our daily lives, and there's not many people that can actually say to you now, oh, I'm not on Facebook, what's Facebook? Because, you know, or Twitter or whatever. So social media is such a big part of our lives that to be able to have this history included in this is just such a great step, I think, for our community too.
My question is, social media sites have a tendency to move along and become kind of old hat, and a new one comes in. By putting this kind of content on, say, one social media site, is there a risk that maybe, hey, Facebook might not be the thing that everybody's on one day, and then it's kind of lost again?
I don't know. I think Facebook has been around for quite a while now. I know we're getting so many new types of social medium out. You know, I think you were showing me that you've got what's the one for the photos? I don't know. I'm not up on it.
Instagram or
yeah, there's
Tumblr
Instagram, there's Tumblr. You know, Twitter's of course about people are posting photos on Twitter. But I think Facebook has just got a bit of a history behind, and a lot of people are still connecting. And I mean, I'm sure as things go along, there'll be something else as well. So I don't know. I think once it's on the internet, it's there forever. So people are still going to be able to access this information, and it's going to be good. To be able to see
and
it.
Certainly with organisations like the Gay and Lesbian Archives, it's really important that this information is there. So they'll be able to upload or download or do whatever they like with these images because they're in the public domain. Mm. And I think that gives us an opportunity. So even if something were to happen to the social media site and Facebook was, I don't know, shut down, you would think be a period before that where you could keep the data and secure it.
Well, you know, they say, you know, once something's deleted on the internet, it's not deleted.
There's no such thing as deleted.
You know, it's not that hard to bring up a cached file and be able to find that information again. But, you know, these things, I mean, I'm a bit of a history buff, and I love to sort of read about where we've come as a community through the years. And it's nice being able to see pictures and information of different places that people have been, different shows that they've seen, and, you know, it's just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
We are going to speaking about great things that have been happening, we have been looking for our icon of the week. So our icon this week is Sally Ride.
Mm-hmm. What's she all about?
Sally is an American physicist and astronaut who passed away in the last week. Now, out of the 330 American men and women who have served as astronauts since the start of NASA's human flights, mm-hmm. There's only been one that's been known as being gay, and she never actually came out. It was when her obituary was written, it was actually written by her partner. Her long-time same-sex partner. So
Wow. It's
an environment that obviously she didn't feel that she was able to come out in.
I think that's really important that we talk about environments like that, because when we were thinking about Icon of the Week, we were essentially thinking about people that had done wonderful things maybe for the community. But this is someone who's done something fantastic in her own right, who hasn't been able to be out and open in her own work life and in her own life more broadly. So there's something a little bit sad in that for me. So I feel a bit sorry that that's the case, but we also need to understand the times that she lived in realistically.
Well, she was the first American woman in space, and she's been said about her for quite a long time that she served as a role model for young women who want to come up into that. And now her family's actually saying, well, she will actually be serving as a role model for GLBTI youth, that, you know, she might not have been able to felt comfortable enough to come out during her life. But it shows that it doesn't matter where you've come from and who you are. Even if you are same-sex attracted, it shouldn't stop you from being your dream. And if your dream is to be an astronaut or do something absolutely amazing in life, you shouldn't let your sexuality hold you back.
Most definitely. But also I think a very important issue to touch on is that we need to be creating environments, work environments, that don't have this discrimination, that make people feel like they have to hide who they are. And there's more than enough occupations out there where some people who are same-sex attracted or part of the GLBTI community may feel intimidated.
And I think that's a really important point is that that's part of us as a generation in moving forward and creating those environments that people can feel comfortable in being out, not only in their personal lives, but also in their public life and in their working life. And quite obviously, even though NASA has said we create an environment that people can be who they want and divulge the information that they want, the percentages say, you know, a rough estimate, you know, 1 in 10 people are same-sex attracted. Well, we've got 330 people have been astronauts.
The statistics probably would be the same as those borne out by professional athletes or in professional male team sports in particular. So
even
it's
if
not
you
surprising.
Say, even if you say, you know, there could have been, you know, 10. So, you know, it's still aware of they haven't been able to do it.
So once again, the icon of the week is Sally Ride. You are on Gay News Week.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
And it's Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt, and we've had a few messages come in. We've had one from Shannon just saying that they're interviewing Adam Rowland on SatMag about RMIT's Pride Mentoring Program that we talked about just before. And there's another message from someone who didn't say who you were. We thank you very much for your response, and they're just saying that we're having another good show. So thank you, whatever your name is. Please put your name.
It'll be very interesting to hear from Adam Rowland about on SatMag when he's interviewed to talk about RMIT's Pride Mentoring Program. We spoke about it earlier when we were talking about the Monash debate, and it would be really interesting. Tune in Saturday Magazine at 10 o'clock this Saturday.
No worries. This has been Gay News Week, but unfortunately that's all we have time for tonight.
A very big thank you to everyone who joined in the conversation, and especially our technical producer, Matt Nock, for pushing the buttons.
If at any time throughout the week you want to get in contact with us, please do so through our social media or email us at gaynewsweek@joy.org.au.
Or you can also head to joy.org.au and find links to all of our other social media profiles. Feel free to suggest any topics you want to hear, and look out for our podcast put up for the end of the week.
But until next week, this has been Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt. And of course, don't forget to suggest your topics throughout the week and what you want to hear. Stick around. You're on Joy 94.9.
Here's news. They say no news is good news, right? But no news means no Gay News Week. And that would be bad news. Bad, bad news. So for news you can't refuse, choose Gay News on Joy 94.9. Now there's something for you to muse. That rhymes.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.